I wanna love you, yeah, over and over again. I wanna see what your life can bear over and over. Hey, baby, don't say good night. Oh, when you know it's time for love. There we go. That's all I got.
That was more than enough. Thank you very much, Anya. I really appreciate you opening up the show that way. It's our little thing that we do after almost 600 shows of people singing. It's just something that's attached to the construction life now. So I don't know how many more shows we'll continue doing it, but you get on the show, you do a little bit of singing, then we get talking. Simple as that.
Amazing. Great.
Welcome. And you're basically halfway around the world. What part of Australia are you in?
I'm currently in the Gold Coast in Queensland, so that's sort of central North Australia.
Okay, and so you're 10 hours ahead of us, right?
I think so, yeah. So it's 6 a.m. here, so the sun's just coming up.
Yeah, and it's
Yeah. Whereabouts are you?
4 p.m. here, the day before in Toronto. So we're in Toronto, Canada.
Yeah, amazing.
Awesome, thank you. And I still don't know exactly. I think we just connected through social media. I think I came across some of your feed there, and I started following it. And I was actually really appreciating a lot of the stuff, a lot of the content that you were sharing, which made a lot of sense to men and women. And then it just resonated, it connected, and I was like, you know what? There's something here to listen to, first of all, and then to kind of just keep on capturing it as well and understanding where you're going with it. So I definitely want everybody to understand that this is going to be a very good show when we're going to talk about what you specialize in, which is basically love, sex, and relationship coaching, and you're helping both sexes, and basically I would say that we all need it to start off with.
Absolutely. I mean, everything that we do in life is relating with other people. So relationships apply to our romantic relationships, our work relationships, our family relationships. It's universal.
It is. So I'd love, Anya, for you to kind of give the listeners a little bit of an introduction to you and how you got started, from, I guess, the modeling over to getting into the healing and helping people. I know that it was a big chunk of your life was that starting off point in getting into the modeling world and then having certain experiences in life and then getting you to where you're full time doing what you're doing right now.
Amazing. Yeah, thank you. So, I mean, I'll do the shorter version. So, I was in and out of the modeling industry from a very young age. So, from about the age of 5, I think, was when I did my first very, tacky kind of photo shoot. We have Target here in Australia. I'm not sure if you do.
Yeah, there. Well,
But
it used
then,
to be in Canada. It's in America. Yeah.
it used to be cheap, but now it's more like Target. It's actually quite expensive to shop there. So I'm not dissing them, but back then it probably wasn't as cool. And yeah, that kind of in and out of, I guess, acting and drama and performance and dance. And I was a very creative, artistic child and had a bit of a break in my mid-teens. And then I got back into it when I was about 18. So I've just turned 31. So how many years is that? 12, 13 plus years ago. And I won a catwalk competition that a photographer friend told me to participate in, and I won. And then I got to start walking in Melbourne Fashion Week and Australian Fashion Week. So I was a runway model, and back then I was a size 10, so that was considered curvy. Before we see like the evolution of what plus size and curve means now, back then I was kind of your average size woman, quite healthy. And yeah, that was considered curvy. So that was quite scandalous for me. And I felt like I was really trying to represent just a healthy, embodied woman. But the industry, as we kind of all know, particularly in its older days, was not so kind to the female form. So I spent a lot of time trying to lose weight and being told that I wasn't slim enough. And that kind of created a whole bunch of eating disorders and distorted, image of self. But I kind of, at this point, I'd already moved through some pretty intensive mental health kind of issues and breakdowns. So I kind of started yoga and meditation when I was 18. And that was a very slow integration because at 18, I'm still partying with friends and having a couple of pretty, terrible relationship experiences. And yeah, that kind of led me to 21 when I say I had my reawakening, you could say. I think that year, the age of 21, so it's actually 10 years this year that I stopped partying and drinking alcohol. So I kind of had a wake up call. I'd woken up, didn't know how I got home. I'd wet the bed. I was like totally blacked out that night. It was like very trashy. And yeah, basically, I would say that yoga and meditation saved my life at that point. I just totally changed my life around. And I was constantly living in these realms of like spirituality and then the others behind the scenes. And then on the front hand, I was like a bikini model. So it was very like, it was quite strange. No one really knew what I was like up to or doing behind the scenes. And yeah, I guess that's kind of the short version. I can keep going
No,
to
it was just
elaborate.
I wanted people to get a sense of it. And when you had that kind of moment 10 years ago, was it like a wake up call? Was it literally like a switch where you just got home and you just, I'm not happy, I'm not fulfilled right now in my life, and I can't carry on this way. So when you finally did wake up from that, did you realize this ain't gonna happen again? This can't happen again.
Yeah, that is literally that easy. Like I can't even explain it. It was just the decision was made. There was no internal fighting with it. It wasn't hard. It just was like, that's why I say like an awakening. I just woke up and I was like, yep, never again. And that's kind of sent me on the trajectory of my relational work and lots of healing. Because what happens when you choose this pathway of wanting to truly understand yourself and close the door to all of the ways that you self-medicated or self-soothed through partying and alcohol, then you have to start learning how to feel your feelings, all of the ways that you coped. Me as a teenager, that was quite wild and very self-destructive, to now going, oh my God, who am I? And what are all these feelings that I have? And how do I cope with them because they're so big. And so I kind of have a background, or I specialize in trauma-informed healing, which means I work with people with complex trauma, particularly women, working in sexual trauma. And I work with men too, and understanding their emotions and how to understand their sexuality. And a lot of that came because I didn't understand my sexuality. I didn't understand my sexual trauma. I didn't understand how my childhood and how my teenagehood had really led me to this place of self-destruction. And now I was in this new phase of like, okay, now I understand and I can see it all, but how do I deal with it? And how do I live with it? How do I move through the shame of my sexuality and the sexual shame from sexual trauma? And so that there's something so beautiful about it, even though you could say it was a traumatic experience, to be able to come to this place and speak so publicly about it gives space, for other people to feel and lean into their liberation of their sexual shame. So
Because they're
it feels
afraid, right? Like most people in general are afraid to even let somebody else know that part of them, that they experienced that, that they went through that, that they're going through that. And they probably don't want to be judged, or they don't want it to be looked at a certain way that they can't overcome this. Is that what happens? Is you start meeting a lot more people that are having the same difficulties that you did?
yeah, I can't say the exact percentage of, I don't know the exact stats because it's different in every country, but it's pretty high. Like most women I work with and most women even in my friendship groups have experienced some kind of at the moment, the term that seems like that's being used is like sexual violence, whether it be physical or energetic or like predatory experiences at a very young age. But not only women, men too. And that's what's been so surprising, is working with men and understanding their sexual shame and a lot of the ways in which, What's it called? Erotic innocence. That's what we're calling it. Erotic innocence. We all have a beautiful, erotic, sexual, and sensual nature. And a lot of people, for a lot of people, that gets taken away at a very young age. And so we get really confused around what sex means, what it means to be sexual, when the right ways are to use that energy. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about loving men and educating men, is because men are only as good as their past relationship or as good as their parents are at educating them.
Very, very true. I want to ask you, Anya, like you went through that stage 10 years ago, but was it a challenge for your friends? Because obviously they didn't have the same moment. So were they still challenging you that, listen, let's just go out, let's just have another drink, let's just go have another party? I'm assuming that went on for a period of time until you confronted it or confronted them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I often, I don't know if you guys have the term there, but we call it the deso, like this designated driver.
No, we don't
Oh,
call
you're
it that.
going to
Yeah, we
be
have a
the.
designated driver. Yeah, but we don't call it that.
Yeah.
Okay, the dessert. All right.
Australian slang, we call it the deso. You're going to be the deso. So I liked claiming that title a lot. And so I'd be the designated driver. And so that worked for them, actually. That really worked for them. But it didn't last long, because when you're sober and you're constantly around, and I call it energetic violence, like a lot of my friends would get so wasted that it was ridiculous and embarrassing, and often energetically and emotionally violent. Everyone's having fights or yelling at each other. And what was the standing moment for me? It was like a friend's birthday or something. One of them was falling down the stairs because she was so drunk. And another one decided to pick a fight with me, and she like pushed me basically out onto the road. And at that moment, I just literally looked at her and I said, "Thank you." And I just was like, "I'm done. I'm not like playing in this, realm of fuckery," I call it, because it was just like disgusting behavior and I just didn't want to be a part of it. So that became very lonely for me, because I was a 21-year-old who was like closing the door to all of my high school relationships, all the things that I've known for like the 10 years before. And then I was 21, and no one at 21 is sober, really. I mean,
No.
yes, I'm sure people have stories, but I felt very lonely and very confused. And I kind of had a lot of older friends, like as I was doing my yoga teacher training and my meditation training. That's kind of when I started to get a lot of elders in my life, a lot of people that I was leaning towards that were, double, triple my age, who had been on this journey for a long time and I could seek advice from.
Was it hard for you to connect with them? Because I'm seeing a lot of the younger generation now wanting that, but they're having a hard time finding those people. And maybe those older people don't have the time for everybody, but they have the time for some people.
I just, I don't have this reflection as much now. Perhaps I've grown into myself, and perhaps I'm more my age. But back then, I definitely had an old soul. And so that just resonated with a lot of elders, a lot of people in the work that I was doing. And because I was in the yoga and meditation realms and the tantra realms, specifically, that had attracted very much like-minded people, like-minded souls. And so when you're kind of in that realm, age, the biological age doesn't really become a thing. And so I often just got the reflection like, wow, you're an old soul, and it's rare that someone understands these concepts at this age and can contextualize this stuff at this age. And that really, kept me in a place that I felt like I was like safe and understood and seen and heard and all of those amazing things. So now, being 31, most of my friendships are like my age or younger, and I've kind of grown into the age group and I'm in a lot more acceptance of where people are at. But back then, like, I wouldn't talk to you if you drank alcohol or did drugs or partied or I was very much like, I want nothing to do with it. But now I can kind of be with people with where they're at. And that takes a lot of practice.
I want to ask you, Anya, that I get the sense, and I guess for lack of a better term, there's a war on relationships right now, these days. And what I mean by that is it's the men versus the women kind of thing, where I think there's a big or a large majority of women that are just enjoying life and just going and just doing whatever they want to do, no accountability whatsoever. But I feel as if the men are reverting the other way. And they don't want to be attached to that. Am I wrong to look at that? Like, am I wrong to see that that's how I'm not in the relationship space, so I'm not in the prowling of looking for a significant other right now, and I'm too old to get married, and I'm too old to have children, all that kind of mentality. So I'm basically a person on a park bench now watching life unfold, and I'm seeing what's being presented on social media, and it is literally a yin yang, black and white between men and women of two polar opposites. Am I wrong to say that?
That's well, firstly, amazing observation because that for me feels very true. I'm sure maybe other people might say different, but for me, that's how I feel too. And I think this is why, yes, like empowering women is so important. And I think that's what we saw, in the rise of feminism, that the pendulum needed to sway and break things up from all the extremes. And that's what it's done. And now we're trying to figure out how to heal from that because men became confused on what their roles were, how to show up with not, I guess being villainized. And that's become very confusing. And so a lot of, fathers haven't known how to father their children properly and be good leaders and demonstrate what it means to be a man because they've also been confused. And so we're seeing men, I feel like, taking a step back in fear of, being villainized and doing the wrong thing. And so one of my passions is that loving men and trying to lead in a way that makes them feel like they're empowered to make their decisions and they are so needed, wanted, and desired is so important. And I feel like this is something I read, like Pamela Anderson wrote this in a magazine a few years ago, and she said she was an anti-feminist because she loves men and she believes in empowering men. And I mean, I read this in the last 10 years. It was a long time ago. And that has stuck with me forever. And going, the answer isn't creating separation, it's creating connection. And that's really where my passion for relationships came into play because of my own personal separation and feeling, totally betrayed by the other sex and feeling so let down, whether it be my father wound or my intimate relationship wound, whatever wound was showing up. There was a lot of resentment and a lot of hurt. And I realized that, love isn't enough. We can love someone so hard, but that doesn't change anything. I mean, we can on an energetic level, but you can love someone who's has extremely, toxic behaviors, but that's not necessarily going to change them. And so that's where really the relational work for me came into play. And I realized this when I was teaching yoga and particularly when I was getting into tantra. I kind of was tantrically, you could say, initiated when I was 18, but really only stepped into it around the age of 20, 21. And tantra for me is about what we kind of call in like the spiritual realms, if you want to call it that, is divine union. It is really bringing the masculine and the feminine together in harmony. And we see that as universal energy everywhere we go. We see this in the yin and the yang. We see this in like hot and cold. There's always a polarizing opposite. And that's really what men and women are. And so what has happened is men have taken on a more feminine energy. And because of that, we're seeing more toxic traits on both sides. Women are trying to be so empowered and take on the leadership role. And I don't need a man, and I'm a girl boss, and I'm a boss babe, and I can, climb mountains and hike when I have my period. And we're really like, and a lot of this comes from advertising. And I really felt this in the modeling industry as well, I was like, wow, I'm a part of the problem. You know, I'm trying to promote healthy body image and what it means to be a healthy, natural liberated woman. But I was constantly up against, huge companies and marketing and money. And so that's what's become really confusing. And I think, yes, I want to empower women to choose and have the choice, but I also want to empower women to learn how to nourish and allow their man to step into leadership. But we do, I think, at the moment, women actually really need to like take a step back, self-reflect, and really work on our own issues with the masculine so that we can allow the masculine, the men in our lives, to show up for us.
I totally agree. And I love that at the start of the show, you were talking about how you were much younger and what traumas that were associated with that. And I know that part of your training and what you do with helping people, I mean, one thing that stood out for me was making peace with the past and understanding, what really did happen in there, and then trying to figure out how that has shaped you as an adult male or female. Right. And how do you approach that? I guess, first of all, you're asking for vulnerability from somebody to approach you. And because you really need to get a better understanding of who they are and what they went through and what person they become as a result of that. And then you can start working with them. Is that not how it works?
Yes and no. I mean, working with them or dating them, they're very
Well,
different
yeah,
things.
okay. Well, I would say, well, you know what? Both. I would say both, because you're still going to get some sort of, I guess, connection. If you're dating the person, you're going to understand. It's almost like a detective. You could almost anticipate what the next step of that person's going to do, because you're starting to see these tiny little signs in the relationship that's growing at that moment. So once you start seeing that, you're like, watch this. This is what's going to happen next. It only happens when you've gone through it. And it only happens when you've gotten older and experienced it. You totally, and it's not that I'm some futuristic person and I can see a crystal ball or something like that. It's just when you whittle down relationships and human nature, we are repetitive and we will always revert to exactly what we've always done. That's human nature, simple.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, this is an interesting one. When you're in the role of like a therapist or a counselor, you will always met at, you will always forever, and this is a part of discernment and like becoming a master at your craft. You're always going to be met with the reflection of your own wound, whether it's male or female. And so particularly with men, some of the wounds that come for me, I end up working with men who I have experienced that trauma from. And so this is very common. And so this is why in therapists or psychotherapists often have their own mentor that they go to constantly check in and reflect that they are on the right track and that there's no conflicting, client therapist relational stuff occurring. And so it's really different in the coaching world. Like I'm studying psychotherapy and I've studied multiple different modalities and multiple different therapies. Although I don't call myself a therapist or a counselor, I still have a lot of that methodology come through my work. And so when I'm working with men in that way, I find it much easier to navigate because we know what the role and the relationship is. And I know like I'm constantly setting my boundaries and I can inquire and use the right wording and questions to allow them to feel safe to share with me or communicate with me their relational wounds, their sexual wounds, where they're at in their relational world. However, when it comes to dating, I find that much more difficult. Like I still have my own toxic traits that I will forever be working on. And so when you're coming into the intimate connection with someone, regardless of who we choose, we are always bringing our own baggage of stuff. Everyone has their toxic traits. You get to choose what your boundaries are and what you're willing to put up with and what you're available for. But we just have to find acceptance that regardless of who we choose, everyone's bringing a whole baggage of stuff, a whole lifetime of stuff with them, processed or unprocessed. And so when it comes to my dating life, I find it very difficult because one, of the amount of work and awareness that I do have. Two, like my deep desire for a man to be able to emotionally, energetically, spiritually lead and hold me in all of that, because I have had a very crazy, wild, exploratory life. Not something I have shame about, but I often find that men can't hold that or they feel intimidated by that. And so when you're in this realm of work, it becomes like a very small window of men who are actually actively working on themselves, who are choosing to seek support, whether it be in men's groups or therapies or healing modalities that they're choosing. And so I feel like a part of the responsibility piece about choosing what you really desire, particularly in like an intimate relationship, is always checking in with where am I at actually? What am I working on at the moment, and how would that show up in reflection? Am I proud of the woman or the man that I am right now? Because that is going to show you what kind of person you're going to attract or that you're willing to put up with. Any areas that you are deceiving yourself and you're not being in integrity or authenticity, that will be reflected in your relationship. Meaning, if you know something for me, I just got, 3 years. Came out of 3 years of very intense relational trauma that I've never experienced as an adult. And one of the reflections that relationship showed me was how bad my boundaries were and how bad my self-worth was and how much I let this person make me believe that I wasn't worthy, and that relationship was just highlighting for me all of the things that I didn't even know were there. And so that is what we kind of come up with, and what becomes so intimidating for men and women is because most of us meet each other with like the most beautiful, like, sexy version of ourselves when we first meet. We're always wearing this mask. And so it seems really enticing, it seems really lustful. We glamorize that person, particularly me. I get glamored because I've been in the modeling industry, because I look a particular way. Maybe someone thinks I'm hot. Maybe they think I'm sexy. So they're instantly drawn to me, but they're not connecting with me at a heart level. They're connecting with me at a lust level. And so when the facade or their glamour wears off, when they realize I'm a human being with human stuff, as much as I'm actively working on myself, I have many gray areas that can feel really confronting for people. And I think we both experience this as men and women, wanting to attract someone that really truly sees us and loves us and cares about us. But that means we have to be our most authentic, honorable selves in order to be truly seen. And so I'm not sure if this is making sense
No,
or
it's
I'm
totally
we're on the
making
right.
sense. But I know I wanted to ask you, like, as you progress in different relationships, I know that with myself, do you offload all those toxic traits when you're building that relationship with that person, or do you reserve some of them not to tell them everything? Because as I get older, I'm like, here's the dump truck of who I am. And if any of this shit is a red flag to you, then you let me know. But this is what I am. This is who I am. This is what I become. And if it's not fitting your menu of what you're looking for, then I'm really sorry, but don't think of it as a challenge now for you to try to change this individual, because this individual's been on this planet for half a century. So now these are my toxic traits, and I'm not trying to be a prick about it. I'm just saying, do you at your age, or you going into a relationship or whatever age it is at, do you offload all of it, some of it, or none of it?
Definitely something happens, and you'll resonate with this, and you just said it so beautifully. Something does happen as you get older, and you have many more years of wisdom, probably for me as well, and your relational experiences. But you do get to a point where you're like, this is me, this is all my shit, I'm working on it, or I'm not working on it. And Am I willing to take responsibility and have it reflected to me? Yes. And so I definitely believe that's where I'm at, but it makes it very difficult to date because, yes, maybe that person sees it as a challenge or a game, or they don't really understand the depth of what that means. And so at where I'm at in my life, yes, I find it very easy to talk about all my stuff, but this is what I'm working on. But I really admire that in someone else. That is my biggest craving, is to call in a man who's so deeply willing to self-reflect and also is actively working on themselves outside of our relationship. And that's what can be difficult when you are in the realms of love, sex, and relationships, because there's this expectation that you're supposed to have it all figured out. And actually, because I've had so many, I wouldn't say failed relationships, but many, many challenging relationships, that's what gives me such an amazing awareness, because I've actively chosen to make this my life's work. Whereas someone else, that might not be their life's work, and it's something else, and therefore they don't necessarily master relating, but they just keep going through the same relational wound over and over again, and they're not working on themselves. So it's one of those interesting things. Like, I in my world, in the communities that I'm in, open, honest communication and really revealing, ourselves and our trauma is very common. But it's very confronting for the average person.
I think one of the things that I connected with the stuff, the content that you create and that you get out there, was there a key word. And I started noticing that in my late 20s to my early 30s, this one word started encompassing relationships to me. It just made sense to me. When I kept on hearing this word, and you've shared this word several times so far on this show, and when I started dating, and I was dating much younger, I would have just a conversation and speaking to a woman and just asking them, what is the most important thing when it comes to a relationship? And obviously, as you are in your teens, you're in your 20s, things change. And like you said earlier, a lot of the physicality is there. It's all about the physical and what they look like, their body and the attraction and that kind of emotional connection. And as you get older, that's all garbage. Like, that's just, it's there, but it's not the focus. And the one word that I'm talking about, and you see it with a lot of older tradespeople that I've engaged with through the show here, is communication. It's just 100% communication. If I can't communicate with somebody that I'm interested in, either I'm interested in them physically or emotionally, if I can't communicate, if I can't communicate with a family member, if I can't communicate with a client, if I can't, like, that communication word just destroys everything. If there isn't that line between the two people, it destroys any hope of creating anything out of it. Whether that's a friendship, a relationship, family bond, all that stuff, it just is connected to that one word. And I really, it's refreshing to hear you at your age and discovering that in your early 20s, that you saw that same thing. You saw that communication being so vital.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, conscious communication, or compassionate communication. Some people, even follow nonviolent communication. That for me was really the key in realizing that there is actually an art form to the way that we communicate. There can be a step-by-step process, and sometimes it can feel very methodical. But when you start practicing it and implementing it, you realize that you can start expressing your emotions in such a different way that someone else can actually understand you better, and then you get your needs met.
Yes, very much.
But I wrote something recently, and this is, me, I can practice all of the conscious communication skills I want, but I'm often met with 90% of the people I communicate with don't know how to communicate. They don't even understand that there is an artful way. They don't even understand that there is conscious communication. They don't even understand that there's another methodology in how to communicate. And so that makes it very difficult when you're someone who is working on themselves and trying to, figure out better ways to implement connection and communication, but you're always met with someone who just doesn't have the same context or understanding. And so That is really where self-mastery comes into play, because I'm dealing with people's emotional triggers and wounds all the time. And I have to, now I'm in this phase where I can really hold myself without becoming reactive. So this is, what I teach, and a lot of people in this realm teach, is learning how to respond versus react. That is very difficult when you're met with a trigger or a wound or someone's aggressive energy or someone yelling at you, projecting onto you. And so your energy body, your physical body, really needs to be able to hold someone else's shit so that you can hold it and pick out all the pieces and learn to understand them better, so that it's not about not having challenge, but it's about how can we dissipate the pain, or validate the pain, so that this person feels safe to express and they also feel seen, heard, and acknowledged in what they're sharing. But I'm also then not dumping on all of my triggers and my pain on top of theirs. And then that's when we, fight and create separation and disconnection and miscommunication.
And on the flip side, I do want, and I know that you talk about this as well, is cheating. Like, cheating is part of being a human being, and there's so many levels of cheating and reasons behind cheating. And the reason I bring this up on you is because I recently had a conversation with somebody, and I just said, like, you do this show, you talk to so many people, and people start contacting you for your opinion. And all of a sudden now your opinion has some value because you've said so many good things that are on track with what's really happening in the world, and you get a better sense of individuals. So I started saying recently, where I was talking about, because of how the economical situation is in particularly our industry, and I go back to men and women and their roles, and you've got a lot of masculine men in construction that they know what their role are. And when they're having a challenge economically speaking, they start to get worried about their relationships, whether that's with their wife, their girlfriend, their family members, their own children. It takes them out of that. And now they're not paying attention to those people. And now those people feel a void in their life, which means that they start to wonder, is this individual cheating? Should I cheat? Should I be considering leaving this relationship? And I want you to speak about cheating and understanding why certain people do it, and possibly how to avoid it or how to handle it after the fact, both sides, men and women sides.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. That's a great one. This is still something I'm decoding. And I would say there is a across the board in the relational and intimacy realms, I would say what we've really come to understand is that cheating is never actually about the other person. So if you're the person being cheated on, it's always about the person who's cheating, right? And often it's actually not personal. It comes from stuff that their own, their own insecurity. And so this is why it is actually possible, and I've seen couples do this before, it is possible to heal the relationship even if someone's cheated. That doesn't make it easy, because a lot of the time that person is just using old patterning to keep themselves safe, and they obviously are feeling, not loved, or there's not enough intimacy, or they're feeling disconnected, and so they want to go blow up and sabotage the relationship, or they don't know how to communicate their needs and have them received. So they think that they're keeping their relationship container safe. If I don't ask for my needs and I don't get my needs met here, I'll just keep us playing happy family, and I'll go and outsource somewhere else so that we can keep the peace over here. So there's so many
Let me
different reasons.
just, sorry, let me just interrupt you for 1 second. Sorry about that, Anya. Is it because you think people are confused on what's going on? Like, they look at the situation and they don't understand it, so then they just ignore it? Is that what you think part of it is?
Often a part of it, yeah.
Yeah,
Don't
okay.
get me wrong, I absolutely believe there are men and women who want to have their cake and eat it too, and actually get a thrill out of cheating. The scandal, adrenaline rush that
Excitement
they
in their
get.
life or something.
Yeah, like there's absolutely that occurring, but I would say generally across the board, a lot of the time cheating is not always what we think it is, and there's a much deeper message there. So yes, there are like very toxic relational things happening with narcissism and sociopathic behavior and people wanting control. But if we're talking about like the average person genuinely has a good heart, but just has no freaking idea how to communicate effectively, they have, their own wounds that they haven't uncovered or worked on, and therefore they're feeling lonely or unmet often. It's actually not always men who cheat too. I think it's a very, I don't know the exact percentage, but women cheat too. It's a very high percentage of women who cheat. And most of the time it's because they're not getting the attention that they want from their partner. That the hubby is busy, he's always at work, he's busy, he's worried about money, so he's not emotionally available. And so she outsources, or vice versa. She's busy with the kids, she can't give him affection. So, he outsources. Excuse me, I just need to have some
No,
water.
go ahead. Don't worry about that. I was actually going to say that I had a friend of mine from high school, and I knew him for a big chunk of time. We don't talk anymore, but he cheated, and he constantly cheated because he got away with it the first time. And then he just continued doing and getting away with it. And then it was just funny that when I started meeting more women and I started discovering in their past they've cheated, it was because of the lack of attention. It wasn't about getting away with it. My assessment was that the men do it to get away with it and see if they'll get caught one day. It's almost like a crime. You know what I mean? Like we're becoming a criminal. But the women do it because there's a void in their life and they're not getting the attention. But then you have different types of relationships because then you'll get men that are solely committed to the women and they're working harder, spending more time to provide. And then she translates that to you're ignoring me, which falls into them cheating. And so it's like it goes back to communication at that point. If both parties were just speaking to each other and letting each other know what was really going on, then none of that would have happened. They would have understood each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, I think that definitely occurs. And from my own perspective, in high school, I think I was reflecting on this recently. I've actually been cheated on a couple of times, but they weren't major. Maybe I was just dating this person very briefly. But I cheated when I was 21 on a almost 3-year relationship. And the reason why I did that was because he and I were planning to move in together at 20, or I was 20 at the time, not 21 yet. So I hadn't quite had my reawakening in that moment, but it was very close. And so we were meant to move in at the end of the year, and he decided he wanted to do a 3-month Euro trip with his friends. And he asked basically for a hall pass. And I was like, what? Like, we've been together for almost 3 years. We're wanting to move in together, and you want a hall pass? And that just put me in a spiral. And I'm someone who's generally, if you understand attachment styles, I'm generally avoidant and I'll self-sabotage. So what did I do? I went and hooked up with someone else to blow up the relationship so that he couldn't hurt me, and that wasn't, he was actually a lovely boyfriend at the time. We had such a fun relational experience, and it was very young and immature. So I have a lot of love for where we were at that time. But that was my reason for cheating, and I think that a lot of women and a lot of men do that, is that they want to save themselves from being hurt. And so they go and blow up the relationship because they're feeling unworthy, and it keeps them feeling safe and in control. And that's a lot of what we see, is like, I want to feel like I'm in control and that I'm safe, and that like I'm going to pretend like I don't care and I'm just going to go live my life and blow up that relationship.
Am I fair to say, Anya, that more men than women are more than willing to try to heal the cheating? Or am I wrong to say
I
that?
would not say, I don't think you're wrong to say that. I would love to see and feel the stats on that. I'm not sure if
I
that
have no idea. I'm
exists.
just guessing. I'm assuming.
Yes, I would say from my own personal experience that men are more open to heal from it. But in the other case, I've also seen a lot of women willing, and I've also seen a couple of very, very successful relationships. They've been together for, 12 plus years now, and they had a lot of cheating in their early days, and now they're, getting married and having babies. So it's possible to heal. It definitely takes two people because you're not in the relationship, right? So from an outsider's perspective, it can be very difficult to watch your friend, experience so much betrayal and then still choose that person. And so from my experience more recently in the last 3 years in the relationship I was speaking to that I've been in like recovery from, that was actually quite a toxic relationship. Unfortunately, there's a lot of lying, a lot of betrayal, a lot of manipulation, something that I hadn't quite understood or experienced as an adult, and something that I didn't think I was going to experience because I was like, I've done so much work on myself, I'm so ready for this. And then it was just like an absolute nightmare. And he was emotionally cheating on me, and there was constantly multiple other women in the picture. And so everyone has a different idea of what cheating is. And so for me, I had this reflection recently when I spoke about cheating, and a lot of men were going, well, you don't own me, or men aren't owned by women, so we can actually do whatever we want. Yes, and
Okay.
the when you get into a relationship, you create relational agreements, right? I mean, if you're conscious enough and you both start speaking to what does a relationship mean to you, what does it mean in terms of like our connection? I'm monogamous, therefore this is what monogamy means for me. Texting other women is okay if they're your friends and I've met them. Texting exes is not. Like, you get to choose, and you have this dialogue with your partner. You both make agreements on what you both are in for and aren't for. And what happened, the cheating happens, is when it's lied about, right?
Yeah.
That's my experience, my understanding. So, I was in a relationship with this boy. Oh, I'm not going to say man, he's still a boy and he's figuring it out, right? And he was having an online emotional relationship with this woman our whole relationship, and I was told that I was insecure and that, there's something wrong with me. And I believed that. But a woman, particularly a woman, men too, but women have a whole different plethora of intuition that men just can't access. And
You
so
guys
my
are
nervous system.
superheroes. You guys, like, I'm sorry, but you guys are superheroes when it comes to it. And we're Batman. Like, we're just a person who portrays a superhero. But you guys have superpowers. That's my assessment of the two. Like, and I've done it jokingly. I've been in relationships where I just tested it, and I'm like, I can't keep anything. Like, it's just, you guys will figure it out. You will connect the dots and figure it out. Men will assume, but we can't see the next dot. That's the problem.
Yeah, thank you. I'll
That's
take
how I
that one.
look
I'll
at
take
it.
that. Yeah, we'll take it. Thanks for seeing us that way. I believe that too, actually. And we just have different mechanisms for understanding. So for me, I really trust in a woman's intuition. And I think this is why the rise of the feminine happened, is because it was stripped away from us from such,
Yep.
for hundreds of years. Our say in society only became, really prominent in the last like 50 years plus, whatever. And so for me, intuition for a woman is something that we spend a lifetime harnessing and a lifetime learning to understand. And that's also a part of the work that I do. I work with women one-on-one, and I work with somatic therapies, teaching them how to experience their feelings and sensations in the body so they understand what they want, need, and desire, and they can speak from that place of feeling. And that got really taken away from me in the last few years because I was with someone who told me I was insecure when they're having, 3-hour-long phone calls with another woman on the side of the world that I didn't know. And it was always very like hidden from me, and I was made to feel like I was jealous and all of these things. And this person, my ex feels weird, but this past relationship, he had, ex-lovers and stuff around all the time that I was friends with. I actually have a very healthy sense of space for other people's past relationships. And understanding that sometimes you sleep with someone and you realize actually they're just a friend, and they just stay a friend and they're just around. And sometimes you sleep with someone and there's still attachments there that feel very murky and unclear, and therefore maybe that connection doesn't feel safe. And so I had a very good representation of that around me. So when I felt, this sense of like something is really wrong here, Yeah, I was, you know, shut down and gaslit and made to feel that there was something wrong with me. And that has taken me 3 years of unwinding and working on my psychology to trust myself again, because I was like, I'm actually not jealous. Maybe I've experienced it plenty of times in my life, but I worked pretty hard on myself to get to this place. And so, yeah, long story short, I mean, that relationship, we called it off multiple times. There's always multiple women in the picture. And this online relationship that he had, he ended up marrying her 3 months after we broke up, like legally
Wow.
marrying her. So
Okay.
it was like the most crazy TV show experience that you might ever like. Yeah, it was very public. But, you know, what I've witnessed in their relationship now is like he's doing the same thing. And he's a few years younger than me, so he hasn't quite figured out what it means to be monogamous with a woman and what that means for him, or really claiming like you have a choice. No one gets to tell you that monogamy is the way. My personal experience is that I'm monogamous and I believe in monogamy. But if you believe in polyamory and you want to sleep with multiple people, I also don't have any judgment about that. It's just about you choosing that and being open so that when you're relating with someone, they know what they're choosing. You don't want to get into a relationship with someone who actually is monogamish and needs to have lots of different women or men around them all the time to feel validated and loved.
That's
So.
their own insecurities, like you said earlier. It's as simple as that, and they will discover later on. And every single person, majority of them being men for me in my past life, is the ones that have cheated. They've cheated on the person they cheated with. That's just it's almost an evolution at that point. It's just a cycle of relationship life. So if you think that you're that new woman in that person's life and everything's going to be great, but they were coming out of a relationship, whether it was 3 months or after or during that relationship or it failed that marriage or whatever it is, odds are eventually they're going to do the exact same thing to that person. And sure enough, that's exactly what happens. And then you just kind of sit on the sidelines and go, I kind of predicted that, which brings me to a situation where I want to ask you is, as the friends of you, and then let's say you were cheating, what's the obligation on the circle of friends now? Because I've been in the situation where we've been in Cuba, we've been in certain areas, and all of a sudden we're literally watching somebody cheat that we know is married, and then they would disappear, and then we're having conversations with the rest of the men that are there. What are we supposed to do here? Like, what's the etiquette or what's the story? And then there's that whole cliche, bros before hoes kind of mentality, which is not the correct way to do things. And then you're conflicted at that point where it's going to be extremely uncomfortable the next time that you're invited to a friend's gathering and you've seen your friend who cheated on their wife and their wife is right there. And you're just getting these looks where do not bring up a hint of what was anywhere going on in that situation, right? So, I mean, how do you tell people how to handle that situation?
I love this question. This is something I'm working on currently and something that I've been healing from. So I'll give my personal experience just briefly, with this past relationship I just shared about. One of the biggest letdowns and betrayals I had was that it wasn't that this boy, like, what I would have really desired is to have this boy's friends be like, mate, we love you, but what's going on? And check yourself. Because that for me shows an empowered community that is willing to take leadership for their men, for their women. Because if one of my girlfriends was cheating, that makes me out of integrity because my morals and values are to be in truth and to communicate X, Y, and Z. So now it puts me at a predisposition where I'm now out of alignment, I'm now out of integrity, and I'm in on the lie. And so that's what I wish for everybody is you've got to start tuning into what your morals and values are and what you believe in the world. I believe in truth and honesty. And so if I'm not in truth and honesty, then I'm out of integrity and I just can't live with that. So My perspective on this is that you have a conversation with the person that's cheating and lying and letting them know where you're at. Mate, I love you, but I'm now in on this lie with you, and this is not in my value system to hold. I'm now out of integrity, and now I'm living a lie with you. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to whatever it is. Have a community, sit down with all of the men together, tribal council, go see a therapist, figure out a healthy way to share this with your partner or your wife, because I'm going to give you a few months to figure this out, because I'm not holding on to this with you. This is not mine to hold, and it is unfair for you to go and, have this behavior and then expect all of us to be in it and hold it with you. So that's my perspective.
I agree with you
Heavily in
100%. That's exactly what I did. I confronted it. Well, there's three guys. All three of them would not have it. Different situations, different times, and stuff like that. But all of them were not having it. We're like, we're not having this conversation, Manny. We're not having this conversation, right? So, needless to say, I have not spoken to these individuals in years, long, long time, because I didn't want to be a part of it. It's as simple as that. I think my duty as the friend. Like, I've known you since you were a late teenager. Like, I've seen you date other people. I've been to your weddings. You know what I mean? I've been to your weddings, and all of a sudden I'm seeing you destroy your marriage. I need to speak up. I'm sorry, but I'm going to speak up. If you don't like the words that I'm sharing to you, then I don't give a shit. But I'm still exposing these words. And one of them actually happened over a big dinner, and I had a few too many drinks, and I started being a little vocal about certain things, and they didn't like it. And I'm like, I don't give a shit. You guys outcast me, outcast me. I don't care. I can't sit with that. I've never cheated. I'm not interested in cheating. I'm not that kind of individual. I may have cheated maybe when I was going to be a lot younger, and I would have been done maybe more stupid things or something like that. But I think I grew up faster. Talk about old souls. I grew up a lot faster, realizing I was watching this theatrics unfolding from other people that were getting married a lot sooner than I was, having families a lot sooner than I was, and then they were cheating. So it was almost this evolution going on with these people. It's like, it's almost, well, I'm not getting the attention at home, and then she's not interested. And it was just excuse after excuse after excuse. And I'm like, dude, it's just, if you're not happy in this marriage, either try to make it work or get the fuck out, one or the other. But for you to do something to try to get away with it, that's not a solution to the problem. I'm
Absolutely. I
glad that
love
you brought
that.
that up. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up. We need more of this in the world, because particularly, and I'll speak to, the men listening, obviously, but also this is for women. These are the relationships that we let go the most, is our friend
Yeah.
relationship. So we're constantly like working in our intimate partnerships, because that's always what we, kind of hyper focus on. But then we contradict ourselves in our friendships. And so this is actually one of the gray areas that I really want to bring forward that is missing in our relational world and our relational realm, is how much are you actually in truth and integrity with your friendships? Because most of us have a wound about wanting to fit in, wanting to feel accepted and a part of a tribe. But if you really tune into what you believe in and what you stand for in the world, that can often create a lot of separation. And so we'll disregard our own authenticity just to fit in with the group
Yeah.
so that you're not ostracized. And so I just really want to speak to that and highlight that when we're talking about love, sex, and relationships. This is also a part of your relational world, is how much are you in integrity with your friends? How much are you in leadership with your friendship group? Because we lead by example. So the friends that I trust the most are the ones that can reflect to me the truth with loving kindness and firmness. I appreciate the teachers that can point out my shadow and say, Anya, you're actually like, this is how you're behaving, with love. And there's graceful ways to do this. But I really notice, like, a lot of friendships who don't want those reflections because they feel like they're being seen, or their shadows are so big and they hold a lot of shame, and then they don't want to continue connecting with you because you can see into them better than they are willing to look into themselves. And they're the friendships that will dissipate. And you're experiencing this as you get older. The more that you choose yourself, the more that you choose integrity and authenticity, the more the shit falls away.
Yeah.
Like it just
It just
people fall
happens.
away from you.
Yeah.
This happens. Great. Now I'm more in integrity and I'm more in alignment and I'm being that reflected in more integral relationships who can meet me there.
I want to get into, because I love that you brought this up, that everybody goes through this and you'll probably go through this more than once in life if you want to experience life, is just different levels of anger and how to handle that anger. Like, I know that you've shared so much on how to confront that anger, because life isn't perfect. It's never going to be perfect. And I really wish it stays that way. I don't want it to be perfect. I want it to be difficult. I want to experience certain things. But you also have the right to get really fucking angry. You know what I mean? You're allowed to do that. I would love for you to talk about that.
Yeah, thank you. This is, grief and anger are the two emotions that are a part of my life lessons, but I also believe this is a collective wound as well, particularly for women, but men as well. So, you know, I'll speak to my own personal experience is like, as a woman, you know, being perceived as the nice, you know, pretty kind girl is often a bit of an archetype that we hold. We don't want to be perceived as a bitch or like whatever the wound is. And so it's really becoming friends with the ugliest part of you. So the only way we can find someone to actually meet us and match us and love us truly is if we become friends with our own inner demons. And a part of the ways that we do that is actually going, what am I self-inquiring? What am I actually feeling and experiencing? So I have, and you know, apparently my whole life and from a young age have really internalized rage and anger. And that is so scary for me because it is so big, it feels like it would burn down a building. And women are so afraid of that. They're so afraid of their power and their fire because we haven't been taught how to use it healthily. Through creativity, you know, we birth into the world physical human beings, like we couldn't exist without us, right?
Yeah.
But the other side of that too is that we've just, and this is, I understand, you know, once again, the rise of the feminine and is this experience of like allowing us to be fully expressed. And that can be really scary because a lot of men don't also know how to handle anger and big emotions, and neither do women. And so we're all trying to figure it out. It becomes very scary because there's a lot of energy that needs to be dissipated. So working with anger for me, and this is where I use the word somatics, working with the soma, the energetics of the body, the energetic feeling of the body, is teaching people how to feel. And so feeling doesn't always look graceful and doesn't always look like tears and joy. People want to have these amazing, like a lot of people come to me because they want to have great sex and orgasms. They don't even know how to look at themselves in the mirror. They don't even know how to eye gaze with their partner. They don't even know how to ask for what they want, need, or desire. They don't have good boundaries. They don't even know how to feel. And so if you want to experience amazing orgasms and joy, you need to be able to experience anger and rage and grief and sadness. And what we see on a collective level is most of us have so much shame from our emotional experiences that we suppress it and it compress. And this is where depression is in this compression state. So we all walk around numb and disassociated and just trying to fit in and be polite and like, you know, not ruffle the feathers or have an opinion because it might, you know, create a reaction in someone else. But if we teach ourselves to go all the way down, so hit your rock bottom consistently, because your rock bottom's going to change. Maybe your rock bottom's all the way down here, but eventually as you heal, your rock bottom isn't as deep anymore.
Yeah.
And so you teach yourself how to hit rock bottom so that you can bounce back up, because on the other side of rock bottom is polarity, which is joy and ecstasy and play and orgasms that you could, you know, ever imagine. And so coming back to anger.
We lost you.
We lost me.
I'm back. Sorry. Okay, you're back. Sorry about that. You were just getting into the defining the anger.
Yeah, finding the anger. So, yeah, a lot of what I teach, particularly for women, is learning how to express through the voice. Because this is the place that we haven't learned how to communicate. This is the place that is blocking us from speaking our truth. This is the place that is stopping us from expressing. And so a lot of what I do is teaching women how to voice what they want, need, and desire, but aspecting. And so if you could put the person who betrayed you the most sitting in front of you, and you could just say the dirtiest, most horrible things that is politically incorrect, what would you say and how would you say it? And this is an opportunity for you to become friends with the own inner, like, yuckiness of yourself, because we all have it. We all want to say some pretty nasty things sometimes. And so this is called, like, purging the witness. How can you purge this without energetically, we're not trying to energetically hurt this person, but we are trying to allow ourselves to get rid of and express these yucky parts. And so when we have this opportunity, it helps liberate the energy through the body. It helps dissipate the energy. And so when I offer this to people, they often go, "Oh, but it feels so mean." And, like, I would never really want to say it to that person. And they start going into defense and rationalizing. And I'm like, you have a pillow in front of you right now. It's not actually the person, but you have an opportunity to purge. And so, trying to get people to take this opportunity to start saying all of the yucky things that they want to say is actually really difficult, because they have so much shame that that even exists within them. But you don't realize that when you do that, you don't take all of that stuff home to your partner. You actually come to your partner with, like, a fresh voice. The energy is dissipated. You come into the relationship with more clarity. Oh, I've purged out and spoken to all of the yucky triggers that exist in me in my own time. And now I can come to my partner and actually express from a place of clarity and respond rather than react. And so this is something that I really offer as a reflection for anyone listening to this, is, like, it's okay, like you shared, to be angry, and it's okay to express anger. Sometimes we just naturally project that onto another person. But amazing tools you can use to make sure that it doesn't come out really fiery and like it's going to burn the house down is taking yourself into a room, visualizing this person in front of you or the pillow, and just set the intention. I'm just going to purge all of the things I wish I could say in the most angry way possible, or whatever wants to come through. Sometimes people are, like, throwing pillows. Sometimes they're screaming and wailing. Sometimes they're crying. Sometimes they're really polite about it. It just depends with where you're at. But you're giving yourself space to feel. And that is the biggest thing. If you want to liberate any emotion and feel seen, heard, and acknowledged by another person, you've got to learn to do that for yourself. And it doesn't look pretty. It's not like, yes, talk therapy can be really helpful. Sure, it can help you conceptualize things. But the only way to liberate an emotion through the body is to feel it. And if you don't feel it, you suppress it. And then your anger becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's when it explodes in unhealthy ways.
I really like that, because the truth is that nobody's watching. You're the only one there experiencing this. And I assume that it's up to you whether you want to be extremely loud or very soft spoken, or use words in a very colorful manner that you've never experienced before. But I guess, like, I could totally see that working. I'm actually going to try it myself. I'm just curious myself to do it. But you don't want me to get started into making a doll and creating a whole voodoo thing and stuff like that. Like, you don't want to get me into that kind of world.
No,
No. I won't. I won't. I'm just joking. Like, I wouldn't do that. All of a sudden start setting up all these dolls from these bad past relationships and then start getting angry. No, but I totally agree with you that I could see that being extremely helpful. Just letting that go. Because if you're right, if you don't do that, you're going to do that in the next relationship when you're trying to communicate with that person, which means that you're going to destroy that relationship when it has no chance of ever even starting. That's what's going to happen, because you're hanging on to that past. You didn't get a chance to be angry for what was in the past and just move on at that point. And this isn't about throwing hurt at the person. It's really about just letting go. Like, letting yourself go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is the whole point. We're trying to protect that person from receiving our wrath, you know? And I remember my therapist said to me, he said, you're not going to meditate under a tree. You're going to go pick up a large stick and you're going to start smashing it into the ground. Because yes, meditation is so beautiful and helpful. Great. Meditate when you can. It helps calm the nervous system. Once again, creates clarity, allows you to introspect. But we also have really big emotions that need to be expressed. And so that's an invitation. It's just like you have op so many opportunities, whether you're out in nature. Often I'm in the car actually, and I will put my phone on voice note and I will start having a conversation with that person, and I'll keep repeating and rinsing the conversation until I've rinsed out all of the yucky projections and horrible words that might want to come through. And then after that, you'll notice how clear you feel. You can come into that conversation, that connection, with so much clarity because you've purged. You've purged. So just give yourself opportunity to purge. It'll be amazing to see how people respond to that.
I'd love for you to, because there's a few things that I just learned from what you're doing that I'm not too familiar with. But I mean, I am familiar with Tantra, but I wasn't so familiar with red and black and white Tantras, right? So if you want to just enlighten people on the slight differences, the subtleties between the three of them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Tantra has changed a lot over the years, in particular in the way that we are perceiving it in our modern world. And so traditionally, Tantra, I mean, everyone has their meaning of it, but for me, Tantra is the unification of everything that exists, right? So it's a very spiritual concept. But it originally started with the self, and that's what white Tantra is the self. And so this is almost like the unification of one body, one being. It started off as a very masculine practice. It started off as, you know, these devotees that wanted to become enlightened and were doing all these practices to try and, you know, make it to this place or this space. Then somewhere along, you know, the lines of ancient history, they realized that they were only getting so far and that they actually needed women. And so Tantra then became almost like a sexual alchemy. And red Tantra is almost like the unification of two. And yes, we can call it sexual, but it was more about enlightenment and bringing masculine and feminine, yin and yang together. And Black Tantra, yes, is about sexual alchemy, and it's a little bit more like dark magic. It's about, and yeah, these can be very spirity concepts, but it's almost like the manipulation of matter and using one's sexual energy to manifest and create. And it's more of a taking energy. It's not something that I teach necessarily, although we are seeing it taught all over the world in many different forms. And this is kind of where the boom of sacred sexuality came into play. So Tantra is a Hindu background, comes from a Hindu background, but many different lineages have their versions of that, whether it's in Tibetan Buddhism or Taoism. And then Taoism kind of brought sacred sexuality, sexual alchemy into play. And now we're seeing them interweaved. And so Black Tantra is almost like an interweaving of all of the tantras together. And a lot of it is very sexualized. A lot of it is about sexual alchemy and enlightenment through sexual alchemy. So that's my perspective. And I'm sure there's a much deeper perspective on that.
But I encourage people to actually just inquire about it and just look into it. And then even some of the stuff that you've shared as well, just to get a sense of it, because I want to lead towards sexual and what your thoughts are. And I know that you do a lot of coaching on that, but I get the sense that today's person and what they think being sexual is a far cry of what really being sexual is all about. You know what I
Yeah.
mean?
Absolutely.
Like this
Absolutely.
whole hookup mentality, and literally I slipped and I fell and my dick fell inside her and that's it. That's the extent of sexuality today. And I'm like, that's not sexuality. Like there's so much more associated with sexuality that I think the men and women are missing out on this, I think.
Absolutely. And this is, comes back to education. We've really suffered as a society with our sexual education. And so this is, why Eastern philosophy has been so important in our Western culture and imbuing its medicine, because they had all these ancient, amazing traditions around sexuality and being in ritual together and using our sexual energy as life force to create and to manifest and feed into intuition for, like, tribal council and things that were really needed back then. And then obviously they realized somewhere along the way, I think that's more like before Christ, and then after Christ, sexuality was demonized and we were told that it was a sin because of how powerful it is. And so I think this is, and there's so many different stories, and I can't say what is right and what is true. But one of the stories that is going around Adam and Eve is that it wasn't sex that, oh, how does the story go? It wasn't sex that, made Adam or Eve, come back down into the hell realms of duality and into, like, our human experience. It was desire. And so desire is really misconstrued. Desire makes us, yes, we need desire, because desire shows us a pathway of what we really want. Desire is like, oh, like, I really want to have this experience. But desire also can be misconstrued for lust. Whatever Adam or Eve desired this apple, and when they knew it was forbidden, but it made them override, what they were told, which is not to eat the forbidden fruit. And so this is what leads us astray, and what I believe technically, perhaps in the Bible, was talking about the original sin, is it's not sex, it's desire, because desire makes us do things that doesn't allow us to tune into what actually might be best for us. And so I think that's where a lot of there's so many stories, and there's so much confusion, and so many ideologies. You really get to choose, and it's such a beautiful history to explore. So around sexuality now, like, where are we at? I mean, particularly in Australia, we're seeing a huge rise in sacred sexuality, a huge rise in the liberation of sexual energy. And that can come out really misconstrued around, this is what tantra is, this is what sacred sexuality is, this is what it means to be sexually liberated. Being sexually liberated doesn't necessarily mean dancing around naked or in your lingerie. That could just be a performance. You could be sexually liberated and still be, a devoted monk or something like that. It doesn't look any way that we think it looks. So yeah, where I was going with that is, and desire, is that we're starting to learn that there are multiple ways to have connection and intimacy. And so sexuality is, for me, is an energy. And sexuality is something that we can use as creation. Sexuality, either creates life, we can create babies, it can create art, it can, this desire to create this podcast means that you get to have this conversation, and it's expressed and shared. Sexuality is our life force. And so that's something that I really want to harness in the work that I do, is that when people are shaming their sexuality, you're shaming your sacred life force energy, you're shaming your creative energy. And when you learn to cultivate that yourself, which I think is really important for any man or woman, a lot of women are feeling really unsatisfied in the bedroom because men can't last, a few minutes. So common. They can't get it up. Men are feeling dissatisfied because women are feeling numb and disconnected, and, like, they can't feel their bodies. And so a lot of what I teach is, firstly, you got to train the self. What does sexuality mean to you? Where are you feeling numb in your body? How is that showing up in your life, whether it's relationally, financially, whatever? And so this is kind of the idea of White Tantra, is first work on the self. It doesn't mean that you can't come together with a person with all of your wounds and figure it out together. Absolutely. But my methodology is, like, I'm working on myself and my sexual energy. I'm learning to feel safe in my body. I'm learning how to meditate and channel that energy through certain practices, which means I can orgasm by myself. I don't need someone to do it for me. But then when I do come into connection with another person, it's 10 times better because I know what my body wants and needs. I know how I'm feeling. I know how to shift the energy myself. And it's not just about having sex with someone, because just having sex, you'll notice the energy doesn't last. It might last 5 minutes. He's done. Okay, he's good now. He can go to work. She's feeling left like, okay, we only scratched the surface. And this is what keeps people feeling so dissatisfied in their relationships, is because they're thinking it's just about sex, but it's energetic.
Today, it's a transaction. And just there's a great book called 11 Minutes, which is a Paul Coelho book who wrote The Alchemist. And it's a book about a prostitute. And then she's quantified all the people that she sleeps with. And the average is 11 minutes from the time of starting to the time of orgasm, right? And that's the shitty part, is that if all these dating apps were to basically stipulate you're not allowed to have any part of conversation that's associated with sexuality, they would just die. Tomorrow they would just die, because that's the go-to nowadays. It's literally just that 11 minute mindset of just going in and taking care of whatever you want to take care of for that moment. But then the emptiness associated with that after the fact, and you don't discover that emptiness until you've experienced so many of those that you realize this is completely void. It's just like, this is garbage. And it takes some time for a younger person. It takes seconds for an older person to discover that. But it's that's how I see sex today and sexuality today as a transaction. And in my lifetime, it's never been a transaction. It's been a connection. It's been a point of like sharing, you know, physical but also mental and emotions, and just getting on different levels with that other person. And that could all start from when you're initially meeting them and you're just communicating, you're just talking to begin with. And then that leads to a coffee, that leads to dinner, that leads to a bunch of things. But I think that way on the back burner is the sexuality part of it. And that would just increase the intensity of it when it does happen. But today's society is transactional, which is so sad to see, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, I really notice and I really feel that. Yeah, recently when I was in the States, how quickly just like, you know, just walking with someone I just met, like, and they would want to go in for a kiss like straight away. And I was like, what part of me did you I did not sense that at all. I don't even think I was flirting. Like, whoa, where did that come from? And I felt it really dysregulating and so like, wow, this is where men are at right now. They think that, you know, because we're having a conversation, that that's enough. Yes, communication is lubrication. I'm someone who's really about time now and slowness because I'm energetic. So someone just like saying nice things to me is never enough. I need to see how they show up in life. I need to see how they work on themselves. I need to see how compassionate and kind and loving they are to people. Not just, you know, saying all the things I want to hear in one conversation. And so there is a lot of confusion. And this is why I teach love, sex, and relationships from a tantric lens. So men, particularly, you know, teaching men sexual mastery, for me, that is like teaching a man how to cultivate their energy field, meaning learning how to breathe, learning how to meditate, learning how to move and manipulate energy. Because when you do that, you will last longer in the bedroom. You will satisfy her more.
Yep.
And we're constantly met with the forbidden fruit, desire. I just want to come. I just want to fuck. Come on, let's keep going harder, faster, longer, strong, like. But it doesn't last. It doesn't cultivate the energy. And so in French, they call it le petit mort, the little death. And so when a man ejaculates in the tantric lens, it's called the little death because his life force just got wasted.
Mm-hmm.
And so on a tantric lens, what I teach is a man how to hold that so he actually doesn't ejaculate. And there's different rules depending on your age as a man. I kind of in the sexuality realms, it is said maybe ejaculate once a week or once every 2 weeks. I'd have to find the exact age bracket for each. When you're younger, it's longer. Don't ejaculate for up to 4 weeks. When you're older, it's like ejaculate once a week. So you're allowing the energy to move through the body. But that, as soon as that happens for a man, not all men, but most men, that's it. They're done. You can go into hibernation. You've completed the task. Your biological body, your physiological body is telling you, oh, we're done now. We've completed the task. That's literally how men operate. And a woman, it can take a woman 40 minutes, 40 minutes to whatever you want to call it, open, get wet, get excited, get turned on. And so, I mean, there's so many different elements of this, but this is why sacred sexuality and tantra are so important for me, because this is where people are the most dissatisfied in their life, the most dissatisfied. And this is what is going to create longer, stronger, healthier, intimate relationships is, yes, sexuality and communication start before the bedroom. That's how we create intimacy, is how you communicate with each other daily, how you share your vulnerabilities, your deepest, darkest desires, and your secrets with each other, how you create safety for each other, how much you listen to each other. If I'm feeling unheard, and then all of a sudden, you want to have sex, my body is like,
It
what? Like, I'm
doesn't
not
work.
here satisfied. Like you said, the action. So that's the shift that we've been seeing, I think, in the last, 50 to 100 years, is the archetype. And I see this. Have you watched Bridgerton?
No, I can't get into it. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
There's
I
lots of
see
shows
this in
that
a
I
lot.
can't get into.
No, so fair enough. But women from, hundreds of years now have been sold off. Whether you are, the prostitute in the street, or you're in a high rank and you're, being brought off into another kingdom because the transaction is, you need to save land, or you need to support another family's community. And so historically, regardless of what your lineage is, most women, if not all women, come from a sexually transactional place. And when you start to understand that, that's what we as women are trying to unravel in our own sexuality, is how can sex be empowering and liberated and respected? And how can men decondition themselves for seeing, or unconsciously, like the internalized misogyny that we all have, all the internalized patriarchy that we all have? We're unraveling all of our ancestral wounds around what all of this means to us. And I think that, yes, we're seeing a huge liberation, which is amazing universally, but also there's still so much work to do and we're still figuring it out.
There's so much more, and I got one more question that I want to ask you because I'm not too familiar with this, and you deal with it as well before we get close to wrapping up. But I do want to tell the men that are listening that one little trick that I learned in my 20s is pick a CD that's about 60 minutes long, remember what the last song is, and you don't come until that last song.
That's amazing. I've never heard that before.
You know,
You
you
just taught
know,
me
you know
something.
what that last song is. So until you hear that last song, you're not allowed to orgasm. So now you've got 55 minutes of focusing your energy on yourself and her. That's how I looked at it, right? That's my 2 cents there. But I do want to ask you about cervix release.
Yeah, amazing. So obviously you can do this with a partner. This one's particularly for women. And this is something that I offer in my training. So a lot of women are really numb. They actually can't have a cervical orgasm. They can only have a clitoral orgasm. And often the clitoral orgasm, yes, it can be amazing and it can be really addictive, but you're not going to get the full, not necessarily the full body energetic orgasm that lasts and lasts and lasts and lasts. It's kind of like a quick ejaculation. That's how I see it. So cervical release. Men, you can do this for your partner, but if she's not feeling safe, then she needs to practice and do this for herself first. You can use your fingers, or you can get like a little crystal wand or a dildo. And the invitation is to set up a really meditative space. romance yourself, put on candles, get your oils, whatever it is for you. And you're going to practice using this wand or using your fingers, and you're just exploring the internal walls of your cervix. What does it feel like? What does this feel like? Oh, I don't feel anything there. Most women don't feel a lot inside their internal walls of their vulva, right? So, self-exploration, this is why women, this is like your job to do this for yourself first, so that you can invite your partner in and say, hey, like, I don't necessarily want to have sex, but will you help me, feel into my cervix, which means, you can do this one together naked if you want to, and you can play with sitting on top of each other and he's inside you and you're just sitting there, you're not thrusting, and you're just noticing what happens when you move. Oh, that's painful actually. Can you just hold, sit there with me for a moment and breathe together? Often, a lot of women, we hold our emotional body. So here's a little bit of science for you. The nervous system, the vagus nerve that runs all the way down the spine, is connected to the cervix. So you have this huge neural network that is connected to your pelvis as a man and as a woman, but particularly for a woman. So when you are stimulating and working with the cervix, you're also stimulating the pineal gland and the vagus nerve that's running up the spine. And so when women are feeling numb and disassociated, they're holding to onto a lot of emotions in their body. So the cervical release and practicing exploring the internal walls of the vulva really allows women to take time and start mapping the inside of their pelvis. Because when we do this, you'll find emotional release points. And when you find emotional release points, the invitation is to lean into that with love and intention and go, oh, what is that feeling? Oh, I'm feeling grief. Oh, my goodness. And you'll notice if you're safe enough with your partner, you might really just want to cry. And so, how can he hold you in that and allow you to just cry? Because your cervix, your pelvis is holding on to a feeling and an emotion that needs to be expressed. When that's been released in a safe way, that's when we can access better orgasms. That's when we can access more sensation in the body. And so this is why cervical release self-practice is so important, and finding a partner who can do that with you in a safe way and who's so devoted to allowing you to access your pleasure. Does that make
It
sense?
totally makes sense. And I,
Yeah.
the way you could also do it too, if you want to let her drive the car, you can be behind her and kissing her neck and taking care of sensations that way because of that. And I knew about that nerve connection thing. That's the thing about it. So it's 55 minutes. You have lots of time to do a bunch of stuff that you can figure out, right? So I got to do the 12 questions with you, Anya. This has been a blast. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing this. And I know it's going to connect with a lot of people that are listening, men and women. I like to say over and over on the show that this show is asking men to wake up a little bit. I want them to stay masculine. I still want them to be tough boys, but I also want them to understand that there is value in the softness in moments in life. Simple as that. So just appreciate that. And I think that there's opportunity there. So that's why I do these kinds of show. And that's why I reach out to people like you. And this has been absolutely amazing. And I want everybody to reach out to her on IG. You can get all the connections on IG under I am Anya, Anja Rose on IG. And then you'll see her links there on Facebook and everything like that. So I want to ask you the 12 questions that we do at the end of the show. And I'll change it to relationship because generally the word that we use in the questions is construction. So I want to ask you, what is your favorite relationship word or phrase?
Favorite relationship word or phrase? I would say, I don't know if there's a phrase, but I would say revealing, the art of revealing yourself. Yeah, learning how to be vulnerable.
So important. Well, I guess this is still applicable to relationship and sex. Least favorite tool.
A wrench.
A wrench. What do you miss from your childhood?
Oh, what do I miss from my childhood? No responsibility. Yeah.
Well, okay, I can. Well, the question is, what construction sound do you love? But I guess what relationship sound do you, whatever works. I don't know, whatever works.
What relationship sound do I love? Oh, I love it when, I love it when he tells me what he wants and needs. Those sounds like.
No, you know what's funny is that I just had a thought just now, and it was just I've had my share of conversations on the phone, especially if it was long distance relationships or whatever, and smile bubbles cracking on the phone.
That's, oh, wait, yeah.
You know that sound, right? You can crystal clear hear that sound. Yes, that sound, right? What is your favorite beverage?
I'm gonna be boring here. I'm just gonna ginger tea.
That's
I'm
not boring.
such like an old woman soul.
What turns you on and off in a relationship?
Oh yeah, I can get the ick with the way that someone eats, but in relationship, just lack of attunement when someone is just really unaware of their behavior and can be really obnoxious.
What turns you on?
It turns me on. Oh, communication.
Yeah.
Communication and like the and touch. Yeah.
Favorite curse word?
Definitely fuck. Definitely fuck. Yeah.
Favorite vehicle, any mode of transportation?
My dream car would be like a 1970s Mercedes-Benz.
Convertible? Or are we talking?
Yes, I could
I'm
do like
trying.
the
Is there a particular model? I'm trying to. I know the styling of the 70s Benz, but I'm trying to figure out which one.
What model would it be? I think from memory it's like a two, is it a 280 or a 230 road SL Roadster?
Yeah,
You have to look it up.
in red, right?
Red would be amazing, but I actually like the dark or the midnight blue.
Okay, now we know what you're talking about. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
I thought about this a lot. I'm definitely a singer or a dancer or a DJ, like something to do with, music.
What profession would you not like to do?
Plumber. I would not like to be a plumber.
Heaven ex actually just, I always like sharing this fact, they're the most to cheat. They cheat the most out of all the trades. Yeah. Always
How do
question
you know
if you're
that?
dating or you're married to a plumber and they're leaving in the early evening after dinner and they're wearing cologne, they're cheating. That's as simple as that. Because plumbers do not wear cologne. I'm
Right.
just, that's my little
Okay, I
two
love
cents right there. Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
You're finally here. You took your time.
Anya, thank you very much for being on the show. And I'm so glad that you woke up early to be on the show. And I really appreciate everything you shared. Thank you again so much.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for your work. I really appreciate it. You're inspiring so many men, so I'm very grateful.
Thank you. Don't go anywhere. I got to get a Polaroid, but that's it. We're out of here.